Okay, thank you everyone for coming to this talk, and I'd like to thank Fujimiya for actually inviting me here, and of course that gives me a chance to escape minus 12 degree weather in Toronto. Okay, so today's talk, I'll be talking about, this title is Local Moments of Physics and Doped Calcium Ion Arsenide, a dual description. It's a sort of a try to give a little bit different title than usual title than I usually give, which is basically some summarizing the X-ray emission spectroscopy studies that we've been doing on various types of ion nictides and in chalcogenide samples. And so that's what I'm going to tell you about. So I always forget this, so I want to do this first, which is acknowledging a lot of collaborators. And as you will see, we were actually fortunate to be able to look at many different samples, so that's why the list of collaborators who provided us with the samples is very extensive. And I think most of the work that I'm going to tell you about was mostly done by my former graduate student, Lena Gredesen, who's now at, in Stuttgart. And recently we've been doing some collaboration with Lilia Boeri and Igor Mazin and Luciano Vittenzi, and I'll be talking about a little bit of that. So before talking, so here's the outline of the talk. So so the three parts of the talk are, first, I'm going to sort of go into a little bit more in-depth discussion of X-ray emission spectroscopy, because I want to sort of discuss what we are really measuring. And for those of you who are impatient, the answer is actually we are claiming that we are measuring fluctuating local moments, and I'll sort of do a little bit more better description or in detailed description of that in a moment. And then I'll sort of go over the survey of ion-based materials, and using this technique, we can look at the materials dependence and also temperature and doping dependence. And the main sort of outcome of this question that I'm going to tell you is that there is not much of a temperature and doping dependence for the fluctuating local moments that we are measuring with X-ray emission spectroscopy. And one exception that we found was actually in calcium ion arsenide, which actually goes through this well-known so-called collapse tetragonal phase transition. We do see a large temperature dependence there, and so we actually went in and then looked at this sample in more detail, and we ended up actually sort of starting with the description of a very localized description, relying on the fact that there are different types of spin state transition. And then sort of recently, we were able to explain our data using so-called reduced stoner theory, which is a DFT-based calculation. And we'll be sort of talking about these in the later part of the talk. So before sort of going into this, I thought that this is a nice first slide to talk about, because you can see that Chimiao actually gave a talk yesterday about this kind of thing here. So with the reason why I'm going to start with this is because I want to sort of bring everybody onto the same page that the local moments that we are talking about is this local moments here that is at the, in the paramagnetic regime, and in the strong coupled regime, of course, we will be looking at the local moments everywhere, and then that sort of condenses into a nail-ordered phase. And in the very weak coupled regime, we don't have any local moments, and magnetism arises from the Fermi surface nesting. And of course, we seem to all agree, or I don't know from yesterday's talk, that it seems like nictites falls in somewhere in between, and that makes it more interesting and more difficult to understand the magnetism. And the local moments, again, I emphasize, is where I'm talking about the paramagnetic local moments. And another sort of well-known diagram that I'm going to bring up is this DMFT calculation by Gabe Portillier's group. And here they actually plot calculated so-called paramagnetic fluctuating moment, and that's the quantity that we are interested in. So basically, the local moment, when I say is, it has to be basically in the paramagnetic regime, fluctuating. So there is a sort of spatial and time scale that is involved in discussion of this local moment. And So the question is there actually experimental way to determine this? And there is a sort of well-known method to determine this fluctuating local movement, and that is doing inelastic neutron scattering. So if you use the neutron scattering sum rule, then if you do Q and energy integration over all phase space, basically, then you can get this quantity local and fluctuating movement. And that's a very expensive way of determining this one quantity. And it turns out that you can use X-ray spectroscopy to get the same information. And of course, the question is it really the same? But for now, I'm going to claim that it's the same information. And also, we'll show you some data that's supporting this idea. So there have been actually, this is the work that we have done sort of a few years ago, and then so we looked at many different samples and we plotted the so-called IAD quantity, which is proportional to the moment size, or so-called the fluctuating local moment size, and we found that sort of these samples have a non-zero and fairly large actually local moment. And this is not the only work, and there is actually some earlier work by Bondino et al. So it's sort of looking at the photo emission, X-ray photo emissions so spectrum of the ion 3s so core level, and they could actually sort of determine the local moment is also proportional to the splitting between this and that. And there are other works. So this was done at ESRF on the ion telluride type of materials, and then they could actually measure their basically, using the same type of information, they could extract the information. So overall, the information that we get using X-ray spectroscopy is more or less the same than, and the only difference between these two things, these two techniques, is whether what kind of core levels we are using to actually get this information, and actually how we analyze this. So actually, I'm going to sort of talk about that in detail, to sort of explain how we get this quantity, so-called IAD. So it's used in here and over there. Yeah?
I'm a little confused by the picture on the left. You said that the IAD is a measure of the fluctuating moment, and there's a right axis scale which indicates the number, and those look like the measured ordered moments that I
saw. So I'll come back to that, and then for now, actually, let's ignore this, and then we are basically talking about the IAD is proportional to the fluctuating local moment. Okay. So the quick answer is that you are correct, and then that is a basically wrong scale. So let's start with this. I mean, so I don't know how familiar we are with it. I mean, some of you expert, but so X-ray absorption and emission process is like this, and then in our experiment, we are basically exciting 1s a core electron to the MT4P, and then that's the first process of this experiment, and that is X-ray absorption part, and then there's X-ray emission part, which is actually this 1s level is filled by 3P electrons falling down, and they emit a K-beta fluorescence line. And our experiment just measures actually this part only. And this, of course, is a really simple atomic physics-like experiment, and this was done in a long, long time ago, before the event of synchrotrons or anything like that. So this was actually a paper that I could dig up, which is in the 1959, and Kenjiro Tsutsumi did X-ray spectroscopy study of ion compound, and he found that there is not just one emission line, which we would expect from basically this energy difference between 3p and 1s level, and there is another actually sort of satellite, it's called the K beta prime, and I quickly realized that actually this is because the 3p and the 3b has an exchange interaction. And that splits the 3p, whether or not this is a spin up or spin down, basically changes. If the 3d is polarized, then actually this will split the energy, and that splitting in energy actually is responsible for this splitting in energy. And that was the original sort of explanation of why there are two features in k beta 1 and k beta prime. And the modern description is a little bit more, it's a more correct description. It's not necessarily this is just a discrete state like k beta 1 and k beta prime state, but it's actually you have to do a full multiplet calculation to get this so overall line shape. So this is not just the broadening, but there are many different multiple states, and that's basically forming this sort of overall line shape like this. So this was done, and there are sort of like Frank Root had done a lot of work on this type of thing. And so here's actually sort of showing you what they could calculate. So this is a theoretical calculation of multiple structure for a certain sample. So this is, I think, experiment, and this is a theory. And they could reproduce the results fairly well. And the point that I want to make here is that, again, this is not just two levels, two basically peaks broadened due to experimental resolution. It's because, I mean, it's composed of a lot of these different multiple structures. And another thing that I want to point out is that even in the non-magnetic state, actually, this peak doesn't go away. So there's still sort of a small remnant of a spectral weight due to these multiplets. And that the structure completely changes. And that's so, but the peak really doesn't go away in this case. Okay? So that's basically the picture they have. And so now that's the modern version of theory, and then there is a modern version of experiment, and we can actually do these measurements quite well using some modern X-ray spectrometers and synchrotrons. And the sort of behind story of this work is that we first wanted to study RICS on this material, and then we couldn't actually see any signal, and it turns out that we can actually get this X-ray emission spectra much much easier to actually get this X-ray emission spectra, and it turns out to be a very interesting actual exercise. And one thing that we learned is actually that this is a very simple dipole transition type of experiment. So the signal is very big, and we can go through a lot of samples and get a lot of quantitative information using this. So we first did our experiment at APS, Advanced Photon Source 990, using RICS instrument, and the second one so we moved our setup to our operation to the Cornell high energy synchrotron source, which actually developed a new X-ray emission spectrometer which we could use. So the actual spectrum looks like this. So here's our first look at the barium ion arsenide, and this is ion telluride, and this is a potassium ion selenide. So here, as I told you, that the splitting here between these two things. So this feature basically tells you how magnetized your D levels are. So the qualitatively, you can see that as you go to this limit where this potassium ion selenide, this is an insulating sample, and we know that the correlation is probably large and then have a very sort of well-developed local moment there. And in that case, we can sort of see that there's a clear difference between these two peaks, or the splitting is there. But as you go to this limit, then you can sort of barely see over there. So we can basically say that this local moment is small for barium 1 to 2, and it's large for this potassium ion selenide. But how can you actually get some quantitative information using this thing? And for that, it turns out that there's this technique, or sort of trick, or analysis technique called the IAD method. And that is, if you actually have a reference sample which is known to be non-magnetic, then what they suggest is actually sort of just take the difference between non-magnetic, which is the red one here, and magnetic one, and basically see how different they are. And if you just integrate over the difference, and you take the absolute value of difference so that actually it doesn't go to zero, and then that basically is proportional to the local magnetic moment. Okay, so this is completely phenomenological, and what they did was simulated the spectrum and then calculated using this method, and then tried to see actually how good this method describes the actual the local moment, and that's what they sort of, they confirmed that this method actually does work, and it's been sort of used in this field for quite some time. And another the sort of a side note is that the X-ray emission spectroscopy is not the most popular technique, or the has not been used quite a lot in the condensed matter physics, but this has been actually used quite a lot in the geophysics, because what they're interested in actually magnetic state of ion on the high pressure and so on. So that actually this technique and so on have been all developed in geophysics first, and so we just are borrowing this to look at the ion compounds. So as you can see, it is very important to have the reference sample. And we were actually fortunate to have this reference sample ion chromium arsenide, and which is non-magnetic. And actually, my colleague Steve Julian were attempting to grow. People actually like to know what the
structural factor as a phenomenon. I presume it's non-zero.
I think it's so.